This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Today we're going to do an episode of Rebranding Safety Reacts, and if you're watching us on YouTube, you'll see that hopefully you'll see a screen. God knows if this is actually working, but hopefully you'll see a screen. If you're listening on a podcast, I'm going to try and explain as best I can what's going on the screen. But essentially what we're going to react to today is the phrase safety first. So I'm going to go through a couple of models and things and how I kind of explain the how safety first doesn't work and how also it may work as well. So essentially today is just going to be a short video slash podcast of me reacting to the phrase safety first. It's something that we hear a lot, but it's also something that we hear people destroy all the time. So without further ado, let's jump quickly into the intro.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety. Crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk
Blue. What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. And today we are doing Rebranding Safety Reacts. Rebranding Safety is brought to you by us at Risk Blue. It's our campaign to make the world a better place, essentially do our bit as much as we can, but ultimately change the perception of health and safety. So if you want some support from us, if you want a bit more than just listen to a podcast, we provide both technical and transformational services, and we also make videos and podcasts for companies as well within the sphere of like culture, safety, behaviours, health and stuff like that. So yeah, from risk assessments to culture change to videos, we can do it. Oh, so just drop me a line, james@riskfluentlimited.com. If you want to find out some more, go to riskfluentlimited.com. That's riskfluentltd.com. Thank you very much for listening. Let's get into my reaction then to the phrase safety first. So safety first has been kind of demonized for a long time. And actually, there's not really a lot of good critical conversation around it. It's just safety first is shit, safety first is shit. And I get it, right? But maybe you don't. And also, like, saying safety first feels good, right? Feels right, doesn't it? But first, let's talk about what it is and what it kind of works. So here I've got a slide that I've used in a couple of sessions, and this is from a paper by David Provan and Drew Ray. See the citation there? Andrew Ray and David Provan, so they did this paper. You can actually get this paper free to download. I think it was in the IOSH journal, which you have to pay for, but I think you can actually download this for free online now. So anyway, I've used this model. So this model comes from the paper. This kind of summarizes the paper quite well. So if we were to kind of break work down into two types of work, safety work and the safety of work, e.g. the operational activity, right? So they kind of break this down into four types of safety work. So the stuff we do in the name of safety: physical, administrative, demonstrative, and social. And then we have the operational activity, so the actual work. So what we're always trying to do is influence the safety of work, right? Hence safety work and safety of work. So that's why they've kind of separated this out to a point, or at least my interpretation is why they separate, to represent that there's no direct connection here. We have to try and influence it. It's slightly separate from the work that we do. And that's a good first step for many of us, just to understand that the word control is probably misleading. So anyway, bring it back to safety first then. We've got physical safety, stuff that actually prevents, it's an actual thing that prevents the likelihood or actual consequences of an accident. So PPE, guarding, things like that, right? Stuff that actually changes the operational work. And then we've got administrative safety, stuff that kind of provides essentially like the scaffolding of work. So they've kind of categorize this as like structural work, the roles, the rules, and the systems that provide certainty and predictability. And administrative safety sits within that. So our management systems, our safety rules, things like that, primarily documentation. Then we have demonstrated safety. So these are things that are essentially demonstrating to external stakeholders. So things like you probably could say the board, but probably less so. I'd say the board probably sits in administrative safety, but there's an important point on that, which I'll come back to in a minute. Essentially things like auditors, the enforcers, insurers, things like that, right? That's what this is for. And then we have social safety, things that kind of make us feel good. And they've actually put safety first in here. So that was why I thought it's important to talk about this. Firstly, just to make sure I don't misrepresent anything, because we did a little bit of a podcast on this before, and something we didn't mention that Drew actually pointed out when we shared it on LinkedIn is these are not like one and only categories. You can have something that sits in administrative safety and it will have connections to physical, demonstrative and social. RAMS is a good example, right? RAMS might say that we need PPE, therefore it connected to physical safety. It is physical safety at the same time. It's clearly administrative safety, but then also we use it to demonstrate to customers to get onto site. So it's also demonstrative safety. And it may also have an aspect of social safety because people feel safer because of the presence of a RAMS. So just thought it was important to say that. So essentially, social safety is kind of conceptual work, right? So they've put in there, if you can read upside down, it's kind of the normative ideas of an institution. So principles, values, things like that. And safety first, zero harm, very much fall into that category. So that's kind of where they do work, right? Because it can make us feel better. It sets the tone of the organization. It might even be like a value to kind of contribute to towards our culture, to show that we take safety, we take it seriously. That's what I was looking for. So I think it's first good to understand where it sits. It clearly sits within social. It really doesn't sit anywhere else. If anything, it might have some value towards demonstrative safety, but it doesn't really have any other tangible kind of grips on anything else. And this is where it starts to fall down. Before we get into that, though, I think it's important just to understand the concept of work and risk that we're doing. So this is a model that we made at Risk Fluent. It's really simple. It's not complex. We're definitely not academics. But we use this just to describe that essentially risk is dynamic. If you imagine what you're looking at, if for those of you on the podcast, is essentially two lines going parallel to each other, but they're wavy. So at some points they're far away from each other, and some points they come close to each other. And it's supposed to represent kind of the framework of the work. So the closer the lines get, essentially, the higher the risk the work is. The wider they are, the lower the risk, because there's lots of flexibility to move and so on. Not move, but you know what I mean? Like flexibility within the framework to like multiple different ways of doing it and so on and so forth. And what happens when we blanket rule? So now if you can imagine two more additional parallel lines, straight lines, going across those wavy lines. Imagine if you're on a podcast, you're like, what the fuck is he on about? If we blanket rule and we set that blanket rule to like the low risk way of working, clearly we would have too much flexibility when we're doing high risk work, right? So it wouldn't work because we never do that. What we actually do is we tighten up those controls and we blanket rule that. So we normally blanket rule to like a high control way of working, which works for high risk work but doesn't really work for low risk because it pisses people off, right? So we wouldn't really do that. So but I'm just introducing this concept just to help understand really that work is dynamic, but essentially that's how we would kind of explore that model. So it's really important to understand firstly that risk is dynamic. So sometimes we're doing low risk work and sometimes we're doing high risk work. And why is that important to understand for safety first? Because if we're doing low risk work, it's not safety first. Why would it be safety first? Because safety is a trade-off, as Eric Konigl says, kind of safety is a trade-off to efficiency. Now, I've said in the past that like, I think they're one in the same, safety and efficiency. And I think probably I've changed a little bit on that. I'm more swallowed the perception of efficiency. Many of us think efficient, or we not think, we would define efficiency as being fast and just in time, just enough type model. And okay, that's fine. My previous way of thinking was that it would be inefficient long-term for a company to be unsafe because of insurance premiums and so on and so forth. But anyway, so if we were to assume that there is a trade-off between safety and efficiency, therefore, if we were to always be safe when doing our low-risk work, we would be a very inefficient company. And ultimately, we would just go out of business, right? Because you can't be resilient and efficient. It's a trade-off. So in the high-risk work, it is safety first. It is a more resilient way of working. But when it's low-risk work, I don't want us to be resilient. I'm thinking about safety and slow and thorough. I want us to be efficient and quick because it's low-risk. You know, if you're an accountant working in an office and we've got a phrase of safety first because we've got loads of engineers out doing high-risk work, it doesn't work for them. Because I don't want them thinking of safety first when they're transferring £1 million invoice to save the business and make sure we all get paid tomorrow. And this is where safety first starts to fall down, is that if we use it as a blanket rule, it just doesn't work. Because it's the same as saying, oh, you don't have to wear a hard hat because we blanket rules our low-risk work. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't blanket rules the control measures and mitigations or whatever that was set for low-risk work for high-risk work. You wouldn't say how we control slips and trips is how we also control working at height. It just wouldn't work. So essentially, safety first kind of falls down there because it is the same. It's that safety first would work to some really high risk work, but it just doesn't when we blanket across the organization. When we blanket across the risk, it doesn't work. The next model I want to use here is Rasmussen's dynamic safety model. So you would have seen this quite a lot. This is my very simplified version of it, because the other one is extremely academic, has got loads of woolly words on that I struggle to say and explain. So if you haven't seen the Rasmussen safety model and you are listening on a podcast, if you imagine like a weird triangle a weird triangle shape in a way, and each line of the triangle essentially, so you can see here, you've got, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see economic failure, resource failure, and performance failure. So each line of the weird triangle shape is a point of failure. You cross that line, we fail, right? David and Drew talk about this really well in an episode of Safety of Work called Accident Models or something like that. I'll link it in the description below. It's really, really good. So essentially, what we talk about here is that this black dot in the center of the triangle is the person in the work, right? It's the operator, essentially. And at all times, they have pressure to avoid economic failure, pressure to avoid resource failure, and pressure to avoid performance failure. And safety would fall normally in performance failure, resource being like there's enough staff, there's enough tools, there's enough parts, there's enough PPE. Economic would be budget, profit margin, etc. Other performance failure would be quality, environment, things like that. So constantly you are having a battle with these pressures all the time. So to say safety first, again, would have the same poor effect as it does in the previous model, because we're constantly having to avoid economic failure and resource failure. To say safety first would push this black dot that's in the center of the triangle right close to economic failure and resource failure 24/7. And that's not how a company wants to operate. So we have to accept that as a worker, we are dynamically bouncing around inside of this triangle. And what we can do is just build some capacity to fail along these lines, and stop saying these platitudes of safety first, because it just doesn't work, because it's not safety first. Work's too dynamic for that. It's too complex. We are bouncing around these three points of failure all the time and trying to avoid them as much as possible, and they conflict. You know, you're just in time, just enough model doesn't really work with safety. You know, it's the opposite of resilience. Very efficient though. You know, resource failure, you know, having loads and loads of PPE, having a mass stock of PPE in case we have a pandemic or a breakout, is terribly inefficient because it goes out of date and we have to replace it. But we've shown, you know, in the NHS that caused big problems. We were really far away from economic failure as a British economy when it came to ready to deal with a pandemic in the PPE supply chain, for example. But it pushed us close to the resource failure line and ultimately the safety failure line because we couldn't get PPE out quick enough. But then if we'd have said safety first, we'd have just gone out of business, because we'd have been pushing ourselves right close to economic failure, because everyone would have had mass stocks of PPE for years and years and years that they just never used. And the NHS ain't got money to spare, right? So saying safety first just doesn't work when risk is dynamic and work is dynamic. So then if we were to think about culture, so we might be saying now, okay, well, what's the harm in saying it? Because it's just a nice thing to say. It's just showing that we take it seriously. Well, because I think you saying something in an organization is very, very important within the culture of that organization. So if we were to take the culture principles by Carsten Busch, just to build us a framework of understanding what culture really is, right? So culture is not a physical object. Culture is essentially what they call a construct. It's kind of a thing, yeah? It's just like the air that we breathe. We know it's there, but it just is. You can get insights as to the air quality by looking up and seeing that it's a bit smoky, or there's a taste in the air or something like that, or you're breathing, but ultimately you can't instantly change it. It's just there, right? You need it to survive. You influence it by breathing out, and you also rely on it by breathing in. So it's like a construct. It's a property of groups of people. Principle two is a property of groups of people, right? So culture doesn't really exist without groups of people. Principle three, groups of people are complex systems. Principle four, a complex system is a large number of interactions between the elements of a group that are both seen and unseen. And I think that's really important, that interactions. So it's a complex system is a large number of interactions between elements, in this case would be people, that are both seen and unseen. So interactions between people seen would be, for example, talking, whereas unseen might be like the relationship between you and I, because last time we don't like each other, for example. That's unseen. There's a tension there. It's unseen, for example. Principle five would be a complex system cannot be understood in advance. So that comes back to like David Snowden's work as well, where he says that, the relationship between cause and effect is kind of hard to see. You can't see it. It just doesn't really exist, a traditional cause and effect model. You know, because you're going to do this, but ultimately you don't know what's going to happen. Principle six, ordinary cause and effect does not apply. I forgot that was principle six. Carsten wouldn't have said that. So Carsten says it as well. Principle seven, culture is not caused, that should say, it emerges. Okay, so if we were to take those principles, and I like to combine that with two other people's bits of work. So James Clear wrote a book called Atomic Habits, and he says in there, every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become. No single instance will transform your beliefs, but as the votes build up, so does the evidence of your new identity. And then Dave Snowden defines culture as, why does that say Dave Snowden is a property of groups interacting over time? If you're watching this on YouTube, I apologize. If you're listening to this on a podcast, I've put Dave Snowden's quote, which should say, culture is a property of groups interacting over time. It actually says on screen, Dave Snowden is a property of groups interacting over time. My apologies. I now actually remember seeing that when I presented it in a workshop. I need to fix that. Right. So if we were to take James Clear's work, that essentially every interaction that you have is like a vote towards the person you want to become, or in this case, the culture you want to see, and that culture is a property of groups interacting over time, we combine that with Carsten Busch's work, and we start to see that every interaction we have is like a vote for the culture that we want to have in the end. So safety first then becomes an interaction, whether I read it on a lanyard, on the wall, whether somebody says it to me, whether it's on the document, it's on risk assessment, whatever. It's an interaction between me, and that's a vote towards the culture that we want to have. So you might at this point be thinking, well, that's a good thing. I want a culture of safety first. Yeah, okay. But then it's having to work with all the other interactions, and that's where this falls down, because they're going to work, if you remember, they're going to work, and they've got other pressures on them which are not safety first. And I'm telling you now, the interactions between economic failure and resource failure are more often and more powerful and more influential in the workplace than the performance failure, e.g. safety. So the interactions for economic and resource failure, they're more often than safety first. They're more powerful to influence us. Therefore, that interaction of safety first stops now being an interaction of safety first and now starts being an interaction of safety is not connected with the real world. And that's where it really starts to fall down, because it's not tangible enough. So we might start to think that, oh, okay, well, fair enough, but we could use it as like a heuristic. Like everyone thinks of safety first before they go and do something. A heuristic would be like a person in a complex situation with some time pressures. They take their own mental shortcuts, past experience, situational context, task and information, and organizational factors to solve a problem. And we might insert some heuristics around that problem solving mental shortcut part, to help them solve a problem. But the problem with safety first being heuristic is it doesn't help me solve the problem. It's not tangible enough. You know, if you're thinking about, Dave Snowden gives a really good example of a heuristic in a podcast where he is talking to, can't remember, so I'm not going to be able to link it, I apologize, but he's talking to somebody and he gives an example of a story of him having a climb up the side of a mountain, and heuristic kind of helps him get up the top and remember how, back in the day when he was a proper rock climber, how he does this. 3 points of contact, 3 points of contact. So he's always thinking through, he said, 3 points of contact. And that was heuristic to help him solve the problem, to help the focus, help him get up to the top of the roof. So it, heuristic should be something that helps us take a mental shortcut. And that's the problem with safety first, is it doesn't help us take a mental shortcut because it's too loose and woolly. It hasn't got anything tangible attached to it that helps me do my job or helps me solve a problem. So, in a nutshell, that is my thoughts on the phrase safety first. I get it. It makes sense. We could potentially use it as a bit of social safety to make us feel better, but ultimately it's not tangible enough. It's not able to connect to the shop floor. It's not something I can pick up and actually use. It means nothing. It's just a platitude, and it's an empty one at that. So I get it. I get how it feels, right? And I also understand, as a safety professional, how uncomfortable it feels to say, no, it's not safety first. And everyone's like, oh my God, what? What? How can you not think safety is first? Because it just doesn't make sense. So hopefully you'll be able to use this podcast. Obviously it'll be easier if you come and watch this on YouTube, if you listen on a podcast, because you'll see the slides and stuff. But hopefully you'll be able to use this to help you in that debate and help you come up with heuristics and values and principles that are actually a bit more tangible for the shop floor. It's been a short podcast in the name of Rebound and Safety. 20 something minutes is very, very short. So I hope you've got something out of that. I hope it enables you to have better, more critical conversations around safety, heuristics, principles, and ultimately safety first. And I hope it helps you ultimately rebrand safety. If you need some support with this stuff, we could do workshops around all of these types of stuff. We can also help with technical stuff. So go to riskfluentlimited.com. That's riskfluentltd.com. And you can find out everything that we do there. There's a good summary of stuff on there. All the rebrand and safety stuff has moved over to there as well. If you're not sure and you just want a chat, you can DM me on LinkedIn. You can email me, riskfluentltd.com. Wait, james@riskfluentltd.com. And I look forward to hearing from you. Otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.